You're listening to The Profile.
Welcome to The Profile podcast. God calls us to use our influence to share his love and goodness. For some, this is in leadership. I'm Andy Peck, and for the past 19 years, I've been interviewing Christians to find out how to lead better. Taking the initiative isn't always easy, so I hope you'll benefit from this latest conversation. The Profile podcast is brought to you by Premier Christianity magazine. Subscribe today and get full online access and the print magazine every month at premierchristianity.com.
I wonder where you go for information to assist your leadership. Maybe you take a magazine or subscribe to a website. Doubtless you have someone who provides financial information, someone who gives you an update on personnel issues. Well, there's a source of information that every Christian leader needs, and especially those who oversee a local church. Indeed, this is a book that no church leader should be without. Now, I'm not referring to the Bible, but Operation World. If that's an unfamiliar title for you, its aim is summed up by the front cover, The Definitive Prayer Guide to Every Nation. Operation World gives detail on the religious life of every country in the world and acts as a source of prayer, but also as a tool helping local churches and mission organizations decide how to deploy mission partners and support the indigenous church in any particular area. And I'm delighted to be joined today by its latest author, Jason Mandrick, to talk about the astonishing feat of leadership and administration involved in this project. He joins me on Zoom from Korea, which is certainly a first for this show. So, Jason, great to have you back on the show. How did you come to be involved in this work?
Well, thanks, Andy, for having me. I was born in Canada, as you might be able to tell from my accent. And after becoming a believer and through a journey of discipleship, committing my life to missionary service, I was really clueless about where to go. I knew that God was calling me into full-time ministry. I knew that it wasn't going to be pastoring. And so I was looking around for sources of direction. And I happened to be an Operation World user myself. Now, this is back in the 1980s. And as it happened on one frigid January on the Canadian prairies, the author, Patrick Johnston, came and spoke at the seminary where I was studying, preparing for ministry. And in an overhead transparency-driven presentation that was going at a mile a minute using data and statistics and visualizations and scripture verses and mission field anecdotes, my world was changed, and I got a very clear sense of calling in that moment that God was calling me to be a part specifically of that ministry, not to go to a country or a city or a people group, but to serve with Operation World. So that was over 30 years ago now. And here I am still along, but it really came from a willingness and a desire to follow God's leading to the nations.
Oh, fabulous. I mean, the book is 60 years old, has had 7 editions. Obtaining information must have changed massively over the years. So has anything stayed the same, and what has changed the most?
Yeah, the world, not just Operation World, the whole world has changed profoundly in the last 60 years. We're actually celebrating Operation World's 60th year since its first edition. And that first edition is a great illustration of how things have changed. Patrick was himself an English missionary to Southern Africa, traveling around doing evangelism in the apartheid-driven shanty towns and slums, and discipling African Christians into leadership. There was a lot of opposition and hostility by apartheid governments to the ministry they were doing because white and black Christians were serving and ministering together. And so this was the context in which he tried to put together the first Operation World, in the midst of apartheid, before the internet existed, and with the countries where he was spending his time, mostly Zimbabwe, sometimes South Africa, going through postal sanctions by the rest of the world because of the apartheid regime. So getting information was extremely difficult in those times. And even subsequent to that, we found that getting information was the major challenge for much of the history of Operation World. We had a dedicated team of people scanning various sources and literally had an entire library full of paper clippings gathered as our source material for those editions in the 90s when I began serving and in the decades before as well. And today, the challenge is completely inverted. We're all just inundated with too much information, and the hardest part of our work is extracting what's useful and what's relevant from this ever-rising flood of content that we all have to figure out how to navigate. I think for us, one of the things that stayed the same is our reliance on the relationships with local contacts who provide not just data, but perspective and on-the-ground insight. And those relationships are so crucial to how we operate. What's changed within that is who those relationships are with. In the 1960s, when Patrick began this, they tended to be with white Western missionaries to the nations. Primarily today, our contacts are national leaders in churches and other Christian entities, augmented by foreign workers, including specialized researchers as well, and even watchful intercessors. So the range and the diversity of our sources has grown as a result of the range and growth of the church itself among the nations.
So your average week when you started, how different is that from your average week now?
It's absolutely different, not only because of my changed responsibilities after this long with the team, but even our MO of how we go about doing what we do. It used to be a lot of, pulling out the papers that we had to scan through, physically cutting them with scissors and pasting them with glue stick into comb-bound volumes that we used as our points of reference. We were a team of full-time missionaries, all serving physically in the same location. That was at the old WEC headquarters just outside of London in those days. Today, we're a virtual team. We have no physical office anymore. We have 12 people, and that's a mix of some very part-time and some very full-time people who live in seven different countries on three different continents. So we're a completely virtual team. We're radically distributed geographically, which makes, of course, meeting together and fellowship a completely different proposition than when everyone was living on the same mission compound. So how to lead such a team and such a ministry, of course, looks very different. And it's also a learning curve, obviously, not just for me, but for many of us who exist in this digital space and distributed way of getting work done in these days.
I should say, Jason, that if people are unfamiliar with the language WEC, as you mentioned, WEC is WEC, stands for World Evangelization Crusade. It's been going from.
Worldwide Evangelization for Christ. Yeah,
Oh, for Christ. Sorry, it's changed. Sorry. Yeah,
previous C word has been
I
problematic for
appreciate. Yeah,
some
we
time now.
indeed, yes, the C word. Yes, the other organizations have had similar challenges with the C word of Crusade, indeed. Yes, thank you. Now, as I looked at the publicity, Jason, for the book, of all the words in your publicity, praying intelligently stood out. Christians may differ a little on their theology of prayer, but we believe God hears our prayers. And it seems to me that in all our public and private prayer, we ideally need to be as specific as we can. Now, this is an impossible question to answer, but what kind of changes have you seen in the world which you might attribute to the specific prayer encouraged by Operation World and associated resources? Again, you're going to have a guess at that, but you must have seen changes of in nations over the time.
Yeah, given a lot of thought to this question because I personally wrestle with this notion. Every example of answered prayer, there of course are the counterpoints of unanswered prayer or not yet answered prayer. So if you're trying to approach this, I guess, methodologically or scientifically, then anecdotes don't necessarily form a good basis for establishing what your point is. But I think, going back to the whole purpose of prayer, I think prayer, as we go into prayer, this pleases God, regardless of outcome. And as we spend time in prayer, even praying for other people, for other situations, for other nations, that prayer changes us. Now, with regard to what has changed, one of the things that I appreciate is that a couple of editions ago, we had to add a section in Operation World that was answers to prayer, where we would look through earlier editions and look at the prayer points that were present and have to rewrite or change or introduce new material because the prayers that people had been praying for the nations in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, God had answered those and brought about the change. And so we were able to include prayer points even while the need for intercession continues. So Albania, this radically atheistic regime in the post-war era, from the 1990s onward, things have profoundly changed there. But why Albania and not North Korea or Mongolia, where you could count the number of Christians, people who followed Jesus, on your hands in the 1980s, and now tens of thousands of believers who are sending out their own missionaries to other nations. So why Mongolia but not Laos? Why the Kabyle of Algeria experiencing this mass people movement to Christ, but not the Moors of Mauritania? Why is there this surge of missionary sending from the majority world in places like Nigeria and Indonesia and Brazil, while Christian faith in the West tends to decline? And in the end, I think the conclusion that brought me satisfaction, or is where I've landed, is that being obedient to what I believe are God's clear instructions in Scripture, it's worth following, and it will bear fruit in its own time. And one of the resources, if I can do a little plug, is that it helps so much to treat our times of prayer, especially of intercession, not as drudgery, not as this onerous task of, having to be obedient to Scripture, even though it makes us miserable, but actually taking delight in that, because that's what makes it sustainable. And there's a book written by someone based in the UK, Dave McMillan, and it's called Shaped for Prayer Enjoyment. And I think it's helped me and our team and many others as well just get a sense of we can take delight in the time spent in prayer because that's how God designed us for communion with Him and to reflect His glory back to Him and to bring the nations and situations, even in our own immediate local lives, to Him. And that's really transformed, I think, how our team and our ministry has come to this matter of prayer and of unanswered prayer.
Oh, that's beautifully answered, Jason. I think there's a lot of wisdom and perspective there. Jason, when it comes to the missional efforts of the church, you presumably have a view on the folk where our focus of our efforts should be. When I was a student worker, some missiologist urged us to pray for what was called the 1040 window, which was at 10 degrees to 40 degrees north of the equator. And that apparently was where the so-called unreached people groups were. Where should our focus be today?
Well, people don't use the 1040 window as much as in the past. That being said, the points that were made are still very true. But what's happened is that mass migration has diluted geographic specificity in some ways. What I would say is that I don't necessarily have an opinion on this, but I think the data is absolutely clear. And there are different ways to slice this pie, as it were. But what the data indicates is that there are parts of the world where people simply do not have access to the gospel. There are probably around 2.2 billion people who don't have a means of hearing about Jesus, even if they wanted to. And whatever you think about the concept of ethno-linguistic people groups, I think it's still a very helpful tool and a way for us to understand from a cultural standpoint, not necessarily even from a demographic standpoint, how the gospel spreads most effectively and how churches multiply most effectively. It's extremely useful in that sense. So whether you're talking about individuals who are unevangelized and have no gospel access, whether you're talking about people groups who are unreached, the data very clearly shows Asia is the absolute epicenter of spiritual need in the world. This is no surprise because it has the majority of humans alive today, but it's also disproportionately unaffected or less affected by the gospel. Everywhere else has a much greater degree of access to the good news and a much higher saturation of Christian ministry thus far. Now, there are, of course, always other places. And I dare say, if God tells you that you need to be a missionary to Sweden or to Costa Rica or to Zimbabwe, then you need to go where God calls you. But what the data indicates is very clearly Asia is the center of need.
That's a very helpful perspective. In my head, 2.7 billion Christians in the world is a figure. Again,
Yeah, around 33% of all shapes and sizes of Christians, of course, every creed that would be
sure.
included in that.
So there's almost as many who haven't access to the gospel as there are believers. That's a staggering statistic. Jason, there's a lot of interest in revival, and in quotes. In a book such as yours, I'm guessing you would want to be very careful with how that word is defined. But which nations are seeing significant growth in the church at the moment?
I think that what is most exciting about how God is at work around the world for me aren't these occasions where things bubble up or even explode into public awareness. Of course, I was delighted by following along with what God was doing at Asbury and in other places in the past as well. What we find in those cases of revival is that there's already a very well-established church. I think what's most exciting is what God has been doing and tends to be doing under the surface, below the radar, at grassroots level, that by the time we hear about it, the work has already been done in some ways. And it tends to be, very low key because it tends to be in places where there are security considerations or where persecution is a real thing. So these movements to Christ. Now, a good example that most of us will be very familiar with is what God did in China through the 1970s and 80s and 90s. Remarkable and, unprecedented historically, at least in scale, growth of the church. We got hints of what was going on, but when it was going on, most of us really didn't know the scale of what was happening. In the last 10 years or so, we could say that Iran is maybe a contemporary example, and we see the travails and the emerging tribulations of Iran now, and the spread of the good news is tied into that story in various ways. So the church has been growing there, and many people who follow global Christianity would be well aware that the church in Iran has been growing in the midst of intense persecution for more than 10 years now. Today, I would say that what we see happening, there may be a few examples that I can give, but again, these are just anecdotes. One of them is there's a nationally driven people movement that we see happening in Thailand. And I think this is fascinating for many people because Thailand was always this place that was open to mission. It was open to, in ways that its neighbors weren't, in places like Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. There was intense persecution of the church and difficulty going there as a minister of the gospel, whereas Thailand was very open and very unresponsive. Now, what we see happening, at least in central Thailand and the rural provinces, is this mass movement of people to Christ that's being led by villagers, not some missiologically or academically driven movement, but being done in ways that are very relevant and relatable for normal Thai village people. And the scale of what's happening dwarfs anything we've seen before. So that's just one encouraging or exciting example. Another one would be in the Horn of Africa. And I don't mean that revival is happening in Somalia, although the church is growing there, but when we take parts of Kenya and Ethiopia, there are areas that are very Christian and there are very areas that are very unevangelized that have unreached people groups. And we see often at great cost that the church has been growing across those cultural and linguistic boundaries, sometimes across national boundaries. And this is because of the faithful witness, mostly of national believers who are willing to cross those cultural, linguistic, and religious boundaries and just be witnesses for Jesus, sometimes at great cost to themselves. There's other places as well, of course. We can talk about revival if we're talking about missionary sending. We can talk about it as the beginnings of new churches, or we can talk about the recapture of spiritual passion in places where the church has been present. But I think, what we see happening when the Spirit moves is that we hear about it later, over here, and God has always and already been at work in those places that we think are beyond the reach of the gospel.
Oh, that's great to hear, Jason. And of course, you're able to document to some extent the massive changes in the last decades, where it used to be, quotes, the West to the rest. It is now obviously the work of God throughout the world has meant that sadly the West is often the less healthy spiritually. And thankfully, some of these nations are now providing much impetus to the missionary cause.
Indeed, yeah. So polycentrism is the en vogue term for that, from everywhere to everywhere. And this can only be a good thing. Number one, because the West was never able to do it on its own. We don't have the resources by ourselves, especially not anymore. Number two, it would be unfair to prevent the growing and vibrant churches of Africa, Latin America, and Asia from the privilege of being able to be part of the Great Commission. This is not a burden. This is a privilege to be able to share the good news across different cultures and between different cultures. And then finally, I think possibly most importantly, is that no culture, no country, no denomination, no organization has a monopoly on how to reflect the beauty of Jesus and the glory of God. And there's no way that the British can do that on their own. We need one another because all of us are just facets of the greatness of God and how much more beautiful and compelling the gospel is when it's shared by Nigerians, by Indonesians, by Argentinians, by Russians and by others together. That's the most profound argument. And especially in a world that's increasingly fragmented, divided, and fearful, this is the reconciling power of the gospel that I think only Jesus can really make possible. And it gives us so much more communicative power, and it gives us so much more joy in the doing as well.
It's thrilling to hear, Jason. So as we close, next steps for Operation World, you're, I guess, working and updating the current issue edition.
Yeah, so it's a combination of what we're doing. So as a virtual team, we recognize that we are in a digital world. That's how we primarily operate. And books still have their place, very much so, because our top priority is to produce a new edition. Of course, the challenges presented by that project are very different than in the past. But we have a website and a mobile app. So if you go to your app store and just search Operation World, you will find it. Or the website is operationworld.org. We update that material every year because we know the world is changing faster, and people have expectations that information should be more current, and we recognize that. So we do that. At the same time, we're doing a deeper level of research to produce a completely new edition that we hope will come out in the next couple of years. And so it's this both and. We want to produce a work that is an accurate and as comprehensive as possible snapshot of the church and the need in the world at one point in time, Even at the same time, I'm actually just this week engaged in the 2025 update for the prayer contents of the app and website. We want to be able to engage people who still want to look in a book with paper at how to pray for the world, and people who want to do it through shorts and reels and TikToks and otherwise, because we know that it's both the responsibility of the whole church, but it's also the delight of the whole church to have a broader engagement with the world and to lift up the whole world to the throne of God.
Well, Jason, it's been terrific to chat with you. Obviously, we're encouraging people to get a copy. I was staggered how cheap it was when I went to Amazon to see issues. So somehow you've managed to keep the cost amazingly low for an astonishing resource. So well done.
Thank you. Yeah, it's God's faithfulness in the fact that our team is a mission team. So we exist not to earn a salary or empower ourselves as an organization, but doing whatever is possible to disseminate the information so that people can be inspired and motivated.
Well, may God continue to equip you all as you continue to engage in this astonishing task. So, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Really a pleasure. Thanks again.
That was my conversation with Jason Mandrick, the author of Operation World. His surname, Mandrick, is MANDRYK. Jason mentioned a book during our conversation, Shaped for Prayer Enjoyment by David Macmillan, MacMillan, which is available online. And Operation World itself, I mentioned its price, is available for just under £8. And there's other connected resources if you Google Operation World or go to the Operation World website, including material for young people and for children. I love it myself when people are leading prayer at church and have thought about what they're looking for God to do. And so rather than saying, God bless Africa, narrow it down to a nation and even a people group, and Operation World is going to enable you to be that specific and to see what the Lord does. So I trust that conversation encouraged you to be aware that God is at work throughout the world, but also reminded us of the mystery of His movement, moving in some countries, and for whatever reason, not in others at the moment. So we continue to pray and continue to look to the Lord to bring in His harvest. So this is your host, Andy Peck, thanking you once again for your company and looking forward very much to the next time. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.